Blog Talk Radio.
Trigger, you'll get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children going to adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint and pray that red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream on the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream on the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
Separation walls that surround in the checkpoint. On top is barbed wire like a crown on the checkpoint. Better have your permits if you found at the checkpoint. Coming on the tower, aiming down at the checkpoint. Idea is to keep you in fear at the checkpoint. Enter through the cage in the rear of the checkpoint. Feels like prison on a tier at the checkpoint. I'd rather be anywhere but here at this checkpoint. Nelson Mandela wasn't blind to the checkpoint. He stood for free Palestine at the checkpoint. Support BDS, don't give a dime to the checkpoint. This is international crime at the checkpoint. Arabs get treated like dogs at the checkpoint. Cause discrimination is a law at the checkpoint. Criminalized without a cause at the checkpoint. I'm just telling you what I saw at the checkpoint. Soldiers got bad attitudes at the checkpoint. Condescending and real rude at the checkpoint. Don't look them in their eyes when they move at the checkpoint. They might strip a man or woman nude at the checkpoint. Soldiers might blow you out your shoes at the checkpoint. Gas you up and in like the fuse at the checkpoint. Every day you stand to be accused at the checkpoint. Each time your life you can lose at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream at the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream at the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
At the airport in Tel Aviv is a checkpoint. They pulled over our taxi at the checkpoint. Passport, visa, ID at the checkpoint. Soldiers going all through my things at the checkpoint. I was high risk security at the checkpoint. Cause of the oppression I see at the checkpoint. Occupation in the third degree at the checkpoint. All the nigga wanna do is leave. Fuck a checkpoint. Checkpoint. Checkpoint.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News on this November 1st, 2017. I'm your host, Solomon, and in studio again, we have our college student co-host, Miranda. Miranda's in studio. She'll be giving folks a shout-out very shortly and giving her intro because a lot of this show is going to be centered around work that she and other students are doing. Regarding a very critical issue, and I hate to use the word controversial. I hate it. Those of you who have been long-time listeners and supporters of Your World News, you understand why I hate that. You know, many of us have been programmed and really kind of dumbed down. Continue to say certain things are controversial. They're only deemed controversial because a lot of times. What is deemed controversial is because it is so factual. It is so truth-driven. And because of that, people try to label it, such as the corporate media, politicians, try to label it as controversial to keep those who don't know much about that issue away from that issue, away from discussing that issue. So when we talk about the question of apartheid in present-day Israel and Palestine, that is deemed controversial because, oh gosh, you know, we're talking about something that actually is really, really happening as we speak, something that is happening, has been happening for several decades, and that is the continued oppression of Palestinians. This is not, as this has nothing to do with being anti-Semitic or anti-Jew, and I hate those labels whenever you talk about that, because myself, I couldn't be further from being anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic, you know, than anyone. I am not against Judaism. I am not against, anyone that is Jewish based on that in any shape, form, or fashion. But I am against oppression. I am against oppression. I am against apartheid. Okay, we had apartheid in South Africa. Many of us have heard about it. Hopefully more of us have studied about it. And if you study what apartheid is and you look at what is going on in the present state of Israel, Palestine, it is apartheid. You know, Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela spoke out and said that what's going on in Israel is in Palestine is apartheid. And it looks very similar to what they went through in South Africa. With possibly the only caveat that it's worse, that it is a bit worse than what South Africans had to endure. So I don't like that label controversial, because this is not, talking about the truth should not be controversial, and speaking out against injustices should not be deemed radical. We have to move, if that's the case, then we need to move to a day where radical is the norm. It should be the norm to speak out against injustices. It should be the norm to speak out against, you know, human rights violations. It shouldn't be labeled, someone shouldn't be labeled radical because they do. So this show is going to be a doozy. We're going to talk about truth. We're going to talk about BDS. We're going to talk about some courageous work that my co-host is doing right now as we speak. You know, she's a college student, a junior. And she's the president of her campus's chapter of SJP. SJP is an acronym for Students for Justice in Palestine, a nationwide organization that has chapters on many, many, many college campuses throughout the United States, throughout the world. And she's in the process of trying to introduce a bill that would hopefully get her, the school that she attends, the University of Maryland, to divest from doing business in Israel. And it's not new, not a novel idea. It's a great one. It's an important one. But we understand that with South African apartheid, that's exactly what students did across this country is to work toward getting their universities, their colleges to divest from the white minority apartheid regime in South Africa. So without any further ado, Miranda, I'm not going to say welcome to the show. This is your third time on this rodeo, so, you know, welcome back. And, you know, why? Why are you doing this? What has compelled you to do this, to do this? I mean, you continue, unfortunately, because of the climate we live in, have received a lot of flack, a lot of pushback. You know, you're face, you have been targeted by groups like Canary Mission and so forth, and thankfully there's many others who have been targeted, so it means that many others are doing great work as well. But what do you have to say about this?
Thank you for having me again, third time. So like you said, I'm president of Students for Justice in Palestine at Maryland. It's my second year as president, and I joined my freshman year, and I got really into it. I've always been really interested in the subject of Palestine. My mother is Palestinian, and my father is from Zimbabwe. So when my dad grew up, he was living in Rhodesia at the time, and was also growing up under a system of apartheid. And hearing the similarities between what my dad had to go through in Rhodesia and also what my mom experienced as a Palestinian, it was very similar. And even when I was younger, I learned about Nelson Mandela. I learned about the ANC and their fight against South African apartheid, and again, I was able to see those similarities. And as I got older, I just noticed that history continues to repeat itself over and over, and we see the same system of colonialism, imperialism, and apartheid throughout the entire world at different times, and it's the exact same pattern. And I've always been interested as well in college organizing and a lot of these social movements started on college campuses, and it's really been students have been able to lead the way. And in the 80s, 1989, that's when UMD finally pulled out their investments from the South African apartheid regime. And that was just as heavily contested, I mean, not quite to the same extent, but just as contested as this BDS movement is now in Israel, boycott, divestment, sanctions. And so now knowing that I'm in college too, I go to an institution that has millions of dollars invested in oppression, and I have a chance to say, like, hey, we as students don't stand for this. This is not where we want our money to go. I'm really interested in being a part of that movement and trying to bring about some real change on this campus. And so this is our second semester of trying to push this movement. Before, we had a lot of other things that SJP was doing. We have been boycotting and protesting the annual Israel Fest celebration that our school puts on every year. Thousands of dollars goes into it. It encourages cultural appropriation. It encourages the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF. And so we always say that, like, Israel is not a country that deserves to be celebrated right now because of all the human rights violations they are putting on Palestinians. We also have events like Palestine to Ferguson, in which we talk about the connection between the Palestinian movement and the Black Lives Matter movement. And now we are putting most of our energy into the BDS movement, putting a bill forward through the legislature to get our school to pull their investments from the Israeli occupation.
Right. And I want to ask you a question. So can you give us an overview, like someone that's listening right now that's saying, hey, you know, I thought, like, what are you talking about? I thought the Palestinians were the bad guys. You know, I thought that they were the ones that are terrorizing, you know, Israeli citizens. I thought they were the ones that are, you know, were bombing them and strapping, you know, explosives to their chest and going and killing, you know, on a daily basis, you know, Israeli, you know, innocent Israeli citizens. I thought Palestinians were the terrorists. I thought that they're the ones, they had to be cordoned off because they're inhumane. And I say all this, these are actual quotes that I've heard people say from time to time, whether it's on TV or radio or even, unfortunately, in person. You know, I've heard these things over and over again. And so what is going on? What is the truth? If there's, I know it's, you know, it's something that could be, I mean, this would, you know, to answer that fully would take an entire 15-week college course. But if there's a Cliff Notes version to give our listeners kind of a working understanding of what's going on, you know, I think it'd be instructive.
Yeah, well, I mean, that misconception can be cleared up with, like, a brief history lesson and also just an understanding of what the situation is right now. So, prior to 1948, there was a country called Palestine that was a sovereign country, but British protectorate. And prior to 1948, there started to be an influx of Jewish settlers to Palestine because of the oppression they were facing in Europe. And that was fine. There wasn't any conflict. But it wasn't until 1948 when the State of Israel was declared that the conflict began. So many people don't know, but Israel is only around 70 years old. It was created in 1948. And because Israel was created as a Jewish-only state and Palestinians weren't Jewish, that meant that only two things could happen. One, they were going to be ethnically cleansed, or they were going to have to leave. And so the War of 1948, that's what, like, a lot of people celebrate as Israeli Independence Day, but Palestinians call that the Nakba, which is Arabic for the catastrophe, because that led to 700,000 refugees, 500 villages being destroyed, and 13,000 Palestinians being killed. And unfortunately, the situation has only gotten worse since then. The refugee crisis is still really bad. One in three refugees in the entire world is Palestinian. A lot of them live in refugee camps in Lebanon, Egypt, Syria, and within Israel itself, there are refugee camps as well, in which they have dismal living conditions. And then you have the State of Israel right now has a military occupation over Palestinian territories, Gaza and the West Bank. There's a giant wall that separates Israel from the West Bank and Gaza in which they control who goes in and who goes out. They control how much food they get, how much water they get, whether or not they can get an education. The UN has said that Gaza is going to be unlivable by 2019 because the conditions are so horrible. And there's a system of apartheid. I mean, the unemployment rate in Gaza, for example, is 45%, whereas in Israel it's 6%. And there's a lot, there's rules written into law that give Palestinians less rights. For example, there are certain universities they can't attend, certain jobs they can't have. An Israeli can't marry a Palestinian. There are certain roads they can't take and certain trains they can't go on, and basically just their human rights are being violated on a daily basis. And just like we see in this country with minority population, there's a huge problem of mass incarceration. 80% of Israeli prisons are filled with people of color, Palestinians or African Jews, and 70% of Palestinian men have been in jail at some point in their lives. So it's a very unequal system of apartheid.
Yeah, wow. So what are your thoughts when you, I mean, it must bring about a lot of just frustration and angst when you see, I mean, you've laid out stuff that anyone that considers themselves, you know, I would say like a centered human being, centered on, you know, on humanity and justice, regardless of what religion, culture, and stripe, like, you know, it just seems completely untenable for anyone to why would somebody, you know, say that, you know, that an Israeli and or do something to prevent an Israeli and Palestinian who are in love to marry each other? Why would someone prevent someone from having, you know, these kind of rights? Why would someone turn off, you know, limit the amount of electricity and water, an entire population of people, you know, not two people, not as, you know, it'd be bad enough if it was two or a family of four, but we're talking about a large population of people that have very little to no access, you know, and what that means, and people are listening, yes, that means that, you know, when they're women, they're giving birth on a daily, weekly basis, things that should not be complications with the birth, means that infant mortality rates go up. It means that children are dying. I mean, so if there's a complication with the pregnancy and, oh my gosh, there's no electricity. So it makes the job that much difficult for doctors to, you know, to give birth. So now what do you have to do? Now this woman, if she has to go to a special hospital, you know, now has to take a several hour ride just to get into, you know, Israel proper or something, you know, so now you're putting her life and the child's life in jeopardy, and unfortunately we know that many, many women and children have died just that way. I mean, so just little things that people may not have been used to thinking, these are things that are going on a daily basis. You talk about an unemployment rate of, what do you say, 45%? That's close to 50. And then on top of that, those that do have jobs, many of those that do have jobs are deemed, you know, menial jobs just because they're not making any kind of anything close to a livable wage. Okay? Things only become menial jobs when, you know, just like here in the U.S., when people are paid in livable wages. But there, we're talking about people that, you know, that the ones that do have jobs are getting paid a scant amount, you know, nothing close to what is needed to actually, you know, live, you know, a strong, like, vibrant, healthy life, because you're not able, you're always constantly wondering, you know, am I going to have the money to pay for this, to pay for this, to pay for this, and I, you know, and for myself and my entire family. So do you find yourself oftentimes just kind of like, when you hear the rhetoric on TV and how the debate is carefully, methodically, and purposely framed on the mainstream media? And when we talk about media, we're not talking about just Fox News. We're talking about across the board, ABC, NBC, MSNBC. What kind of emotions, you know, run through you when you hear and see these things?
Yeah, it's frustrating just because, like, when it comes to discussing the oppression in Israel and Palestine, it's crowded out by so much emotion and so much rhetoric that I've heard a lot of people say, like, yeah, I've heard about it, but it's too complicated. I'm just not going to get involved. And really, it's just so simple. Like, it's a matter of fact. There is someone who is doing the oppressing, and then there are a group of people that are being oppressed. And that's that. It's simple. But yet there is so much rhetoric that goes on into these debates. They act like there's so much unknown. They act like, oh, well, nothing can be solved because of terrorism. Like, it's all of these buzzwords that get the American public being like, oh, that's crazy. But really, I mean, if you were to go up to the average person and say, do you support South African apartheid? They're not going to say yes. They're going to be like, no, of course not.
Right.
So then why would you allow for there to be apartheid in a different region of the world? And I truly believe that this is an issue we're going to look back on in like 20 years and be like, wow, did we really just sit back and let that happen? And that's why the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is so important, because it's refusing to have the Israeli occupation be normalized. It's calling out the human rights violations and the oppression and saying, like, we as the public are not going to continue to fund that, and we're not going to support that until there's actual change and real negotiations, not the fake negotiations that have been going on for the past 70 years. So.
Right, right on. And that's a great segue to what I'm about to play, because on the other side of this clip, and I'll say this throughout the show, you know, what Miranda is doing is it's very, very courageous in the face of, you know, given the fact that, are you not even 21 yet?
No.
That you're 20 years of age and you have a lot of courage that, you know, folks that are my own age, you know, people in their mid to late 30s and even beyond, you know, that don't have the courage to speak out in the face of what they know is wrong. You know, as Dr. King, you know, said, to paraphrase, you know, something that Dr. King once said, is that, you know, that the moment we become silent about things that matter is the beginning of the end of our lives. You know, it's the moment we begin to die. And you know, if you choose not to speak out in the face of injustice, you know, that's being carried out by evil perpetrators, then you start to be as culpable as those that are carrying out those same things. So why would you remain silent? Miranda's not being silent. You know, we at Your World News are not being silent. And our guest that's coming on the show in a few minutes has not been silent, and that's Dr. Dalia Wasfi. And I want to play this. This is really important. Really, you know, she's somebody that should need no introduction. But for the sake of the fact, the matter that maybe there's a lot of people that have never heard of Dr. Dalia Wasfi, you know, I definitely, you know, challenge you to Google her name, Dr. Dalia Wasfi, D-A-H-L-I-A, last name Wasfi, W-A-S, S as in Sam, F-I. And just Google her name. She is a human rights activist. I would, you know, yes, you know, she's a doctor, but, you know, she'll probably describe herself as a global citizen, somebody that cares about human life and humanity, you know, has done some tremendous work, especially, you know, in places, you know, in many places, but places like Iraq, you know, she testified before Congress, and I'm about to play a clip from that where, you know, that rightfully so brought a lot of people's attention to this individual and her work, you know, and she's somebody who, you know, actually shares lineage, you know, in Iraq as well as in Palestine. So I wanna play this clip, and then on the other end we're gonna it's a short clip, 3 minutes, and we're gonna welcome her on the show afterwards and get, you know, her expertise, you know, because I would consider her an expert on, you know, on issues, you know, relating to Israel, Palestine, and some other things as well. So. Without further ado, this is Dr. Dalia Wasfi talking about U.S. wars of imperialism. And keep in mind, she was courageously giving this speech in front of a bunch of politicians who, in fact, were very supportive of U.S. imperialism. But they needed to eat crow. They needed to hear this, as do we.
We have an obligation to every last victim of this illegal aggression, because all of this carnage has been done in our name. Since World War II, 90% of the casualties of war are unarmed civilians, a third of them children. Our victims have done nothing to us. From Palestine to Afghanistan to Iraq to Somalia to wherever our next target may be, their murders are not collateral damage. They are the nature of modern warfare. They don't hate us because of our freedom. They hate us because every day we are funding and committing crimes against humanity. The so-called war on terror is a cover for our military aggression to gain control of the resources of Western Asia. This is sending the poor of this country to kill the poor of those Muslim countries. This is trading blood for oil. This is genocide. And to most of the world, we are the terrorists. In these times, remaining silent on our responsibility to the world and its future is criminal. And in light of our complicity in the supreme crimes against humanity in Iraq and Afghanistan and ongoing violations of the UN Charter and international law, how dare any American criticize the actions of legitimate resistance to illegal occupation? Our so-called enemies in Afghanistan, Iraq, Palestine, our other colonies around the world, and our inner cities here at home are struggling against the oppressive hand of empire, demanding respect for their humanity. They are labeled insurgents or terrorists for resisting rape and pillage by the white establishment, but they are our brothers and sisters in the struggle for justice. The civilians at the other end of our weapons don't have a choice, but American soldiers have choices. And while there may have been some doubt 5 years ago, today we know the truth. Our soldiers don't sacrifice for duty, honor, country. They sacrifice for Kellogg, Brown, and Root. They don't fight for America. They fight for their lives and their buddies beside them because we put them in a war zone. They're not defending our freedom. They're laying the foundation for 14 permanent military bases to defend the freedoms of ExxonMobil and British Petroleum. They're not establishing democracies. They're establishing the basis for an economic occupation to continue after the military occupation has ended. Iraqi society today, thanks to American help, is defined by house raids, death squads, checkpoints, detentions, curfews, blood in the streets, and constant violence. We must dare to speak out in support of the Iraqi people who resist and endure the horrific existence we brought upon them through our bloodthirsty imperial crusade. We must dare to speak out in support of those American war resistors, the real military heroes who uphold their oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, including those terrorist cells in Washington, D.C., more commonly known as the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. Frederick Douglass says, "Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are people who want crops without plowing the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the roar of its many waters. The struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. Every one of us must keep demanding, keep fighting, keep thundering, keep plowing, keep speaking, keep struggling until justice is served. No justice, no peace." No.
Right on. No justice, no peace. And without further ado, we have the voice that you just heard, Dr. Dalia Wasfi. We have her online right now, and she is our other special guest, Miranda being the other special guest, and so it's surrounded by special guests. Dalia, are you on? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, definitely, definitely. Welcome on again. This is not your first time, but it's been a long, long time, but thank you for coming on Your World News again. It's an honor.
Oh, no. Thank you for having me. I'm your very humbled guest this morning. Really, it's my honor and privilege to join you and Miranda today and discuss this critically important topic. I just actually want to say that speech was, I did give a speech before Congress, but this was a speech from a conference in 2007. I think if I tried to give that speech before Congress, I would have been escorted by security.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Thank you. I'm glad however, it did go viral. I mean, and look at how many hits it has on YouTube, and it's always pleasant to see things like that having tons of hits as opposed to some of the things I see on YouTube that get way too many hits. I want to open up it and ask you a kind of an open-ended question. Can you tell us your background, who you are? And why this issue you know, apartheid in Israel-Palestine, why you have decided to, throughout, much of your life, speak out about this and to really, champion an end to this occupation and oppression that's going on with many, many Palestinians in that part of the world.
Sure. Most people who know me and know my work will be familiar that with my focus on Iraq. But it's the occupation of Iraq and the assault on Iraq is deeply connected and interwoven to the occupation of Palestine. And that's really from the time I was little, what my awareness and focus has revolved around. My father was born and raised in Basra, Iraq, and he came to the U.S. for his education, and that's where he met my mom. My mom was born and raised in New York, but her parents were immigrants to the U.S., and they were Austrian Jews who fled their homeland after Hitler's Anschluss. So it was a crazy combination of my father was an Arab nationalist, and Arab nationalism was a movement to overthrow colonialism and Zionism. And my mom came from a family of Jewish nationalists. Unfortunately, they were unaware of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine that paved the way for the establishment of Israel. They only knew their own deeply painful narrative, and that completely colored their view of the world and what was happening in historic Palestine. So when my parents got married, that was before I was born, but it was a huge crisis in the family. And by the time I was about 5 years old, which was, my parents were married in 68, I was born in 71. So by 77, things had smoothed over enough that there were some superficial niceties, but kids tend to be perceptive, and I knew there was some kind of problem between my father and my mom's family, and I took it upon myself, as 5-year-olds can naively do, to resolve that problem. And it was just to try to heal my family, and that's actually it's still a driving force today, even though unfortunately was their time, but my grandparents and my dad have now passed on, but it's still in their memory that I continue my work and try to do whatever move the needle of justice. I think I'm terribly paraphrasing Martin Luther King, but just to inch it, even the tiniest nanomillimeter forward in the right direction. So so my focus on Israel, it ties into American politics, and it ties into the politics of the region. And it's all about white supremacy. And it's about Israel being established as a nation for a hierarchy with Ashkenazi or predominantly European Jews at the top, and everyone else comes before them. And that's comparable to what was established in the United States. And in modern times, we have the Israeli army training American police officers. A lot of police departments are sending their officers over to Israel for training in what is really combat operations. And of course, the U.S. military has joint training exercises and collaboration with the Israeli military. And we've seen the main issue was the occupation of Palestine, and now the U.S. is conducting military operations in so many countries in the region, but really everything comes back to this initial egregious crime of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. And so freedom for the entire region depends on freedom for Palestine resolution, the right of return being supported and enacted, and true justice to be served.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's so great to talk to you again.
Likewise.
I just had a question for you. In your years of activism, now you have a lot of experience, especially working in this issue specifically, where there can be a lot of negative rhetoric towards Palestinian activists. I was just wondering, what are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced, and how do you cope with them or respond to it?
Thank you for that question. You know, and I believe I've been relatively well protected because of my background from my mother's side. I make it very clear up front who I am, where I came from, and why I'm speaking about what I'm speaking. And I think this has protected me quite a bit. I very quickly go to defining what a Semite is, that a Semite is someone from the Mediterranean region where they speak one of the Semitic languages like Arabic, Aramaic, Hebrew. And I'm almost 46 years old now, and I'm coming to terms with this definition of anti-Jewish sentiment being described as anti-Semitism, because and applying it to my own family, because my grandparents, may they rest in peace, they were very proud Austrians, and my grandmother in particular was very proud of the and very strict with her Viennese dialect. My grandparents did not speak Hebrew, and they were from Vienna, Austria. They were not from the region, but Arabic peoples are Semites. So the real anti-Semitism is Zionism, the nationalistic movement that sought to clear out the indigenous population of Palestine in order to establish a Jewish homeland, really for Ashkenazi Jews. So I tend to be protected from that, and so what I try to do is distribute that information as much and as often as I possibly can, because so many other people are targeted for being either quote unquote anti-Semites or targeted or being labeled as terrorist supporters. And going back to our comparisons with apartheid South Africa, of course, when Nelson Mandela was incarcerated, he was labeled a terrorist, not only by the South African government, but by the United States government and the United States Central Intelligence Agency. So this is a common path that is a mischaracterization and a negative label applied to the real freedom fighters who are seeking to establish the defense of their human rights. And this is falling apart now faster than ever. It's falling apart for this false label of Palestinians as terrorists, and the truth of Israel as a violent, oppressive state is coming to light more and more every day.
Thank you. Dahlia, what do you think needs to happen? I mean, in order for there to be real, tangible change, you know, in that region of the world where the yoke of oppression is pulled off of people, you know, residing in Gaza, West Bank, East Jerusalem, and even in Israel itself. What really needs to happen worldwide? Because to me, it seems that there needs to be much, much, much more solidarity throughout the globe, because we're talking about some forces that have a lot of resources behind them that are able to, you know, control that narrative, you know, on corporate media airwaves in places like the U.S., the U.K., and so forth. What do you think, you know, needs to happen for there to be some real, you know, tangible change to occur?
Well, I personally am so encouraged and inspired by the next generation. And Miranda is a leader in that generation. When I was in college, I mean, I couldn't even, well, I had my own, I was dealing with my own issues as well, but I know on my campus, and I was in college from 89 to 93, I couldn't even really feel comfortable saying the word Palestine. Now, looking around 25 years later, there are organizations, Students for Justice in Palestine, all over the country, which is an extraordinary change in one generation. And it's actually, I believe that this generation is the one that is going to carry justice through, and we will see the right of return. We will see them, this is my vision, and carry it with me now, that they will be escorting their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, if they are still living, bless them, back to their original homelands. The Zionist movement is in a state of desperation, which is why there is such a backlash now against Palestinian activism. But certainly global solidarity is with the Palestinian people who simply by existing are resisting the occupation. That is always an important piece. But as an American, really the future of the region is up to the people itself, the people who live there. So I see my job as an American to deal with my government and my government's complicity in the atrocities being committed in the name of quote-unquote self-defense. So I continue to work on and focus, bring attention to the atrocities of the U.S.-Israeli occupation in historic Palestine and in the rest of the region.
Thank you. Yeah, I think... there are a lot of people now who are realizing, you know, they're not going to be complacent. It's irresponsible for them to be complacent in this situation because in that way, it's almost just as bad as contributing to the oppression. So for the average person that's deciding they don't want to be silent, they want to be on the right side of history, what can they do, the average person listening, to make their voices heard and support other movements?
Oh, it's a great question. And everybody... You know, this is, it's going to sound like a cop-out, but honestly, I get a little philosophical to answer this question. I really believe that every one of us is here on this earth for a reason and has a special gift that they are given to offer the world. And it's their lifetime that they have, which is their journey for their own experiences and how to use that gift. At least that's my philosophical approach to my life these days. And it's up to everyone. The way to find out what your gift is and what your path and purpose are is to follow your heart. And with the noise coming from corporate media and all the pieces of technology that we have today, this is purposeful distraction from the messages that our hearts are trying to give us. But I believe if you follow that, if you find your gift, following your heart, and you ask yourself how you can use that gift to help others, help yourself and others, both are critical to that equation. Then you will do something that can be extraordinary. Some people choose to use their gift for nefarious purposes. I don't want to name all the names, but I'm comfortable naming Henry Kissinger. That's for decades he's been shaping U.S. policy. But for those of us, you know, for this next generation coming, find your path. And whether it's related to justice in Palestine or in another country or here at home, or it's related to your own path in your studies, in the arts, whatever you can do, there is so much, this world is in need of so much healing. There is something beautiful you can do wherever you are. But for more resources on your campus, find out about groups for seeking justice in the region. And find out, get as much information as you can. This is also, I'm can't, I don't need to be embarrassed to say it. It's the truth. I was in college before there was internet. Now with today's, I know, right? With the internet today, this gives us access to so much. There's misinformation out there, but keep digging, and certainly, keep in touch with Solomon's work. This broadcast has been going and going for so long, and that's every broadcast is a victory. Just sharing the information. Maybe someone out there wants to start their own radio show. Everybody has a contribution to make and has to find their own path. And wish everybody the best in finding it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I too remember dating myself. I too remember being a college student in the 90s. And I'll never forget that first time when my friends, took me into the computer lab where we just, as you remember, Dahlia, it was like word processors, and then we upgraded. We had computers, and the computers were just basically used to, to write papers, and then you could print, you could print them out. And then my friends, he set me up with something. He's like, just random. I said I just randomly picked something. It was like, I didn't know what Hotmail was, and he just set up something, and I'm gonna show you a little trick. And he went on the other side of the room, and then. And he's now look over here. And I went, and it was the inbox, and that was the first time using email. And I was like, oh my gosh, how was this? And so I remember when the first time, using, the internet and email for the first time in college. So you're not alone. I remember that. I definitely remember that.
Thank you for that solidarity. Appreciate it.
yeah, without a doubt, we got to stick together. That's right. But the other point you made, I could not agree more. That each of us, there's something that we can do, and I think that sometimes, and I appreciate your words, because sometimes, like words from folks like you, it reminds, some people that kind of look to just having leadership from well-known, luminaries, and so I can never be such and such. But we all play a role. We all play a role. And some of the most effective organizers and activists are the ones that no one's heard about. And so you're right. With technology today, people can start community, podcasts. They can go out and take their camera phones, and they can, create and produce, segments right from their phone, because now, the phones have these apps that are built in that are free, such as like Movie Maker and iMovie, like right on their phone. And so I couldn't agree more. And we have artists out there, that are using their platform to talk about these things, such as, I remember this is, young female MC from Detroit, Michigan, known as Invincible. I remember her putting out a song about apartheid in Israel, Palestine, and we know about Damn and the work, and so many different, hip-hop artists and spoken word artists and street poets that are using their voices to speak out about a range of social justice and human rights issues, of our time. And I wanted to ask you a question to shift gears a little bit. Can you update us? Because, that's one of the unfortunate things about media in the U.S. It's kind of like this microwave thing, and we've seen this even with when we looked at like Trayvon Martin. Everybody, got out their hoodies, and there was like this movement for a couple months, and then it just died off. But what didn't die off, and what did die off, was black people continued to die off because police brutality continued to go on, and as it is going on right now, and so after that, we're the Eric Garners and so many others, Tamir Rice, and we can just go on and on of all these different, black people who have, Philando Castile, who have been killed since that time. So it's really something that, as being a longtime activist, that the pressure and one of the most important things about any social movement is consistency. It has to be consistent. It can't be just, just for a couple weeks or a couple years. It's going to be a long ground game, and you have to be ready, willing to stick through it. even if it's just once a week that you're consistent, be consistent. And so given the fact that so many people have forgotten about Iraq, it's kind of off their radar, and they think that maybe it's, you know, no longer an issue. Can you tell us what life is like right now for a great many Iraqis? Has it gotten super, super good? Is that why we don't hear about it? What is life like for Iraqis, you know, since that, you know, invasion of 2003?
Well, today it's more complicated. In the heydays of my activism, it was the greatest threat to people's survival was the lack of security, and that was both directly and indirectly. The cause was the U.S. military occupation, the U.S.-led military occupation. Today, the country is somewhat for all essential purposes that this is really a fractured country. There's the Kurdish region in the north, which has been operating autonomously for I think definitively since 2005. Although through the years of the sanctions since the beginning of the 1990s, the Kurdish area was protected by the no-fly zone. But today that region is referred to as the Kurdish Autonomous Region. You have the areas that were, you know, allegedly labeled as part of the so-called caliphate of the Islamic State. And these were major Iraqi cities that some of them had been reduced to mostly rubble prior to 2014, but now completely decimated. This is cities like Fallujah, Ramadi, Tal Afar, Mosul. These are all in the west and north of the country. There is the limited area that's controlled by the central government in Baghdad, and that includes that's the economic hub also, and a lot of the country's wealth is leaving the country. It's not being invested for the people. And then there's southern Iraq, which has been dominated by predominantly Iranian militias since the beginning of the occupation. So depending on where you live, where you're from, or if you're a refugee at this point, it's a very different life. But it remains within the country, within the majority of the country, there's still such a lack of security and the danger of violence around the corner. So it still remains a very difficult life. And many of the services that were once provided by the centralized government of the last regime were then privatized, which was one of the goals of our invasion. So if you have money, much like in the United States, if you have money, you can make your way through. But education is privatized, the healthcare system is privatized, and that has really been such literally a killer for so many people who cannot access adequate healthcare anymore. So it remains a destabilized, weak country, and that is exactly put up the banner for mission accomplished, because that's what the U.S. government set out to do.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Do you have time? It seems like we have a couple callers on. Do you have time to take a question or comment from one of our listeners or a couple of listeners?
Sure. Both myself and Miranda would love to get her in the conversation again, too.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Definitely. Caller on line two from Philadelphia, I see. Do you have a question or comment for Miranda or Dr. Dalia Waspy?
Hi. No, I guess I have a comment. My name is Don, and I was listening to the show, and it's very, very interesting. You know, it's funny because I was just watching Joe Rogan. I'm not sure if you all are familiar with Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's weird that I would be listening to the show right now, because I've been studying the whole situation in the state of Israel, right? Between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and Joe Rogan had a journalist on by the name of Abby Martin. Are you familiar with Abby Martin?
Yes, 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 definitely, yes.
Absolutely, it was absolutely eye-opening. And that interview sent me into this journey of what the fuck. Excuse my language, but that situation over there is absolutely horrible. I could not believe what I was seeing. So I began to look at YouTube videos, you know, of how they call them quote-unquote settlers, right?
Yeah.
How they would enter into the Palestinian neighborhoods and just totally take over the houses. I mean, this one Palestinian woman came home and to find her home, that her home was totally taken over by, like, these Israeli settlers, right? Wink, wink. And the military was backing them up. And I was like, what the hell? Like, this is not cool at all. This is wicked as hell, right? And excuse me, I'm from Philly, so, you know, this is how we talk, so. But it was, like, crazy. All right. I think it's kind of cool, and I feel like the stars are aligning right now, because why would I be listening to this conversation after studying this topic for about a week now, right? So this is absolutely interesting that I would even be listening to this right now, because I think that, like, everybody should go and, you know, really do research on what is going on over there for real, you know, and not just take the U.S. government's word for it or whatever. I don't know. But people should do their own, you know, due diligence and really search and find out what's going on, because it's absolutely horrible, you know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say that, because, like, so on UMD's campus, we do a lot of tabling, which basically means that we just set up a table and try to talk to people about what's going on in the region. We always start off, like, so what do you know about the issue in Israel and Palestine? And they're always like, not that much, terrorism, I don't know. And so when we actually break it down to them and explain the systematic oppression and apartheid that's going on in Israel, they all have similar reactions to you. Like, that's really going on? That's horrible. So, yeah, I really think that if people take the time to actually learn the facts, they'll have similar reactions to that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I don't understand how you go from being, like, refugees to being, like, on top of the world there. That's crazy. You know, you're totally pushing out these indigenous peoples. And, you know, I can empathize and I can sympathize with the Palestinians, because I myself am an indigenous American, you know, and we've been through pretty much similar situations, you know. And it's funny because, you know, it's like they talk about the Holocaust so much, and they talk about never forgetting, you know, it was so horrible what Hitler did to the Jewish people and blah, blah, blah. But then in turn, they pretty much do the same thing to the Palestinians. It's almost like, do unto the Palestinians as Hitler has done unto you, right? So it's absolutely hypocritical. It makes no sense, and it's total evil, you know, period.
Thank you.
And that's
thank
all
you
I have
so
to
much.
I have no question.
I don't know. Yeah. Dr. Waspy, do you want to, you know, address Don at all?
No, I wanted to thank him for the call, thank him for his effort to to do the research, and I think that's a really beautiful example of, you know, just digging deeper on your own and what you can find. I think the description of that the victims of yesterday becoming the perpetrators of today, I think that's a perfect summary. The plans to establish a Jewish homeland, initially they looked at a number of places, but the plans to establish a Jewish homeland actually far preceded the European Holocaust of the 1940s. That became a means of driving a lot of or having a lot of refugees to then settle in historic Palestine, but it actually long preceded it. But it's a very clear perception of what's happened in the region, and then his description of the what the settlers do. To me, what came to mind to compare it to what happens in this country is it's like the settlers coming in is like gentrification on steroids. But we see the same thing happening very slowly in cities where predominantly poor and which tend to be predominantly people of color populations get driven out and new settlers come in. It's really, there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn. And the $3 billion in American hard-earned tax dollars that we send to Israel in military aid number one, is illegal. It's in violation of U.S. law, but also it can be used to support. How about getting the people of Flint, Michigan, clean water? We could start there. There's so much infrastructure to be rebuilt. There's so much for us to do for human needs here rather than supporting oppression overseas. Thanks so much, Don.
Yeah, Don, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. And Dr. Wasserman and Miranda, I want to ask you a quick question, because something he also brought up, it's, you know, we've heard of, you know, pedagogy of the oppressed. But, you know, he also brings up something, you know, talking about his indigenous roots. What do you have to say about what I would call the importance of solidarity of the oppressed? That, you know, it seems to me that people who continue and historically have faced, you know, white supremacy and different forms of really harsh oppression, it seems that we become much stronger when we become so, you know, empathetic to each other's struggles and to take up. And we, as we saw with Ferguson, we saw, you know, Palestinians with, you know, placards that you know, said, you know, everything from hands up, no shoot, or I'm, you know, with Mike Brown, justice for Mike Brown, and things of that nature. You know, Dr. Wasserman and Miranda, what do you guys, you know, think about that? I think that is a really important element, is that, you know, when we have that kind of that internationalist, you know, spirit with one another and our different struggles throughout this globe.
Well, just because I'm right now more familiar with college campus atmosphere, I think that's incredibly important on college campuses. It's important to have solidarity amongst a ton of different student groups so that we can support each other. It's really easy to get caught up in our own issues and our own problems and not see the connection. But really, I've just noticed, as I mentioned earlier, that history continues to repeat itself. And the same tactics that they used to oppress people in this country, they used to oppress Palestinians in Israel, that they used to oppress Africans in South Africa. And so just recognizing the connectivity of that struggle and how we can all unite together to work against it is what's going to give us more power in the long run. And specifically on college campuses, supporting each other in our movements, in our events, our protests, learning about each other's struggles, that's one thing that we've been trying to do more of.
That's beautifully said. I would only add from my own personal experience, you know, I pursued the first part of my life. I pursued a goal to be part of the establishment, which is why I fight so hard now to do the opposite, to bring justice, which requires dismantling the establishment. But through that pursuit, I became a part of a system that has institutionalized racism, and that's the U.S. medical system. It's a very good book by Dr. Harriet Washington called Medical Apartheid. And then I think the subtitle is the use or the victimization of African Americans from colonial times to the present. And I was a part of that system. I have my own amends to make for how I became part and became dehumanized myself, and that turned that dehumanization on others. So this is part of my journey now as well. So it's my effort I began with a focus on my own issues, for my own family, but really I want to extend it to be an ally. To be an ally in the struggle, because it's all the same struggle, and it's a focus now that I have the awareness to stand with my brothers and sisters across the board to bring light to the injustices that I've been a part of, and to try to dismantle those injustices that continue today for others.
You said that $3 billion that is being, you know, doled out by the U.S. government in military aid to Israel is illegal. And I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about, but can you explain to our listeners why that's illegal and what you're referencing?
Well, there's two aspects to that. The one I'm more familiar with is the U.S. Arms Export Control Act, which basically say, and I encourage everybody to look it up, it basically says that we don't deal arms with anyone who uses them for anything other than self-defense. And the Israelis say they're using the arms we provide them with and the monies we provide them with for quote-unquote self-defense, but it's continuing a brutal, illegal military occupation. So that goes out the window. And the second piece is that the Israelis, which nobody really talks about, everybody says we've got to make that part of the world a nuclear-free zone. It's very rarely mentioned that the reason countries in that region are seeking nuclear weapons is because the Israelis, which have bombed and or invaded many of their neighbors, are armed with between 200 and 400 nuclear warheads. So it's the Israeli nuclear program that has been kept a secret, and Israel's refusal to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. This is another angle from which our dealing of military aid to the Israelis is in violation of our laws.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And so are there any moves being made within the American Congress to reduce the amount of money we're giving to Israel on their military spending, or is it just continuing to go up?
I believe it's just continuing to go up. And that's really where there's no partisanship whatsoever. The only disagreement between Democrats and Republicans is how much more war can we get ourselves involved in and how much more money can we provide to the Israeli government. Because, of course, they're kind of inseparable causes that Israel remains an American colonial military outpost in the region from which to control that region, which just happens to have so much oil. And it's not necessarily to get the oil for ourselves. We get a lot of oil and natural gas from Canada, but it's to control Russia's access to oil. It's to control China's access to oil. And when you're trying to maintain your role as the world's number one empire and superpower, you want to control that lifeblood of empires, the oil. So it's very tightly interwoven. And of course, the oil and gas companies have a very strong lobby in Washington. There are still the impacts of the Zionist lobby that influence congressional leaders to the detriment of the people whom they represent. So I don't see any change coming from Congress, but that's okay. The change is coming from the bottom up, and this is such an exciting and important time because this is really the people are kind of taking pulling off the covers over their eyes, realizing that their representatives who have just the most beautiful healthcare plans in the world probably, while they're struggling to meet their own healthcare expenses, that said these people are not truly representative. And so the movements are coming from the bottom up across the board. So it's a very good time. It's a really important time. And just all love and solidarity to all those everywhere who are seeking to make a better world and find justice.
Right. And also just I thought it would be important to clear up one, there are a lot of misconceptions surrounding the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. But just for any listeners, I think you can go to, I believe it's bdsmovement.net, and you can see it really clearly outlined what the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is. And it has three main goals, all of which I think everyone can agree is reasonable. The first one is the right of return for Palestinians. So that's all the Palestinian refugees that have been expelled from 48 and onwards, having a right to return to their homes. A second one is an end to the military occupation. So that would mean no more wall, no more checkpoints. I believe there are over 500 checkpoints in the West Bank alone. And then the third one is equality economically and socially between Arabs and Israelis, because right now that's just not the case. So I thought that was an important thing to clear up as well.
Beautifully said. And the right of return is guaranteed by, I hope I have this right, UN General Assembly Resolution 194. So that's protected by international law. And then the end to the occupation, this was called for in Resolution 242. This is the illegal military occupation that we just marked 50 years since 1967 that the Israelis need to withdraw. And some resolutions get more attention than others. But if we're going to talk about justice and equality, they all need to be enforced equally. Very well said.
Right.
Thank you, Dahlia. I really appreciate your time today, and you know coming on the show and really sharing your knowledge and your expertise and your perspectives, you know, on the issues that we've discussed today. It's really really invaluable, you know, and I'm very very much appreciative of your time. I know, you know, time is valuable, but I also, you know, I just want to say, you know, you'll probably say, oh, no problem, no problem, but really, you know, we're thankful. I'm thankful for you, the work that you've done for much of your life, and I'm thankful, you know, to have this little, you know, close to an hour, you know, time that you've bestowed upon us and our listeners and the show in general. And, you know, and I continue to thank you, Miranda, for your work and being outspoken. Dahlia, you know, much thanks from Your World News to you.
Yes, thank you. It's always really great to talk and hear from you.
Oh my goodness, it's no, it really is. thank you, but thank you, really both of you for Solomon for giving us a platform to have this important discussion and opening it up to even more people who are asking questions, raising the issue. I mean, that's a beautiful victory today. To Miranda, I mean, in addition, I couldn't blame it all on not having internet in college, but that wasn't the case. I hadn't really found myself yet. I hadn't really found my voice. So for someone who became president of her SJP chapter as a sophomore and continues to lead today, just so much admiration and respect from someone from the older generation that it really is. Just briefly, I'll say I was at a conference this past week at Temple University that was commemorating the life and work of Huey Newton. And one of his quotes was that, you know, the youth are the life of the revolution. That's where the energy is. And for energy to be paired with so much insight and wisdom in such few years, really beautiful and remarkable, and keep going and keep inspiring. For both of you, Huey also said, excuse me, Dr. Newton, I didn't know him personally, but Dr. Newton also said that, you know, it's not a question of when the revolution is coming. The revolution is now. Every day is a revolutionary day. And it's my privilege to be able to join you and have this important conversation with you today. Thank you both so very much.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. And we'll join you back in one moment. We're going to come back and close this show out. We're going to play this song by Marcel Cartier called Intifada.
Yeah. Struggle continues, guys.
La lucha continúa, intifada. La lucha continúa, intifada. La lucha continúa, intifada. La lucha continúa, intifada.
Peace is my goal, but never without justice. To be free, a prerequisite for that discussion. They talk in peace, devoid of any context. They hope the people succumb to their nonsense. Netanyahu is a fascist, a racist. Matter of fact, that's what the Israeli state is. Based on genocide, based on ethnic cleansing. Ethno supremacy is what they're extending.
ending. These killers wouldn't last a day without the USA. Professional hypocrisy, that's Obama's way. Making speeches about democracy. Man, it's master manipulation, I hope you see. The first black president is bombing Africa. So quick to sanction Syria and Libya. But when it comes to their puppets in Bahrain or in Yemen, they never ever act the same.
La lucha continúa, intifada. 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 La lucha continúa, intifada.
My heart is Palestinian, I bleed for the West Bank, bleed for the Gaza Strip, bleed 1948. I've seen the torment with my very two eyes, and I could never turn back or turn a blind eye. In the hood, the police beating black men. Connect the dots and you'll see who attacked them. The same forces who kill all across the globe. Afghanistan, the U.S. killing 9 and 10 year olds. Fighting terror with 100 times more of it. That's why Bin Laden existed to begin with. A misguided reaction to the empire. The last decade simply added to the fire. I'm pro-American if we just talking about the people, but anti-USA if we discussing all the evil perpetuated by a government of mobsters. They say democracy, I say they some imposters.
La lucha continua, intifada. 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 La lucha continua, intifada.
The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations will be conducting a rally and march on the White House and National Conference on November 4th and 5th, 2017 in Washington, D.C. For the 8th consecutive year, the Black is Back Coalition is calling on all black people and freedom-loving people from throughout the U.S. to gather in Washington, D.C. to lay out an organized response to the war being waged against the peoples of the world and African people within the U.S. The action will kick off 12 noon with a rally on Saturday, November 4th at Malcolm X Park, featuring speakers and culture prior to the march on the White House at 2:30 p.m. We will rally again when the march reaches Lafayette Park across the street from the White House. To register, blackisbackcoalition.org. Again, that is blackisbackcoalition.org.
So that was Marshall Cotty. Intifada song that he did back in, I believe it was 2010, 2011. And then that last PSA was Black is Back Coalition, their annual march on Washington, D.C., to the march to the White House, and then which will be followed by numerous, breakout conferences and keynote speakers such as Amala Yeshitela, Glenn Ford, Ralph Pointer, and Betty Davis, and so many others, so if you're in the Washington, D.C. area or close to it and you have time in your schedule, come on out, and you can find more information just by Googling Black is Back Coalition. Just Google Black is Back Coalition, type that into your search engine, and you'll find much, much more information regarding that. Wow, what a show we've had today. What a show that we've had today, and I really, really hope that if you enjoyed this show and you're listening now, whether it's live or you listen on archive, if you appreciate this show and you learn something, then don't keep it to yourself. Cut and paste the clip and post into your Facebook page, your Twitter account, whatever your social media is, or just simply send it out in an email blast to your entire network. Don't keep that valuable information to yourself. Give them that humanity, because understanding the true struggle of what's going on with Palestinians, and making sure that other folks are not championing something that they think is you know, they're supposed to be on the right side when they're, you know, championing, you know, the little, you know, talking pieces of false propaganda that are put out there by the corporate media and the Zionists. You know, you're on the wrong side. You know, you're literally on the wrong side of history because you're supporting oppression. So if you know that there's people that would benefit from that information, send it off. Send it off and encourage them to listen to the entire show. To tell them, hey, listen, just take a little bit of time out of your day and listen to this show. You know, I think that hopefully if they have open minds, they'll thank you for it after listening to the show. Miranda, what did you think about, our interview with Dr. Dalia Wasfi?
Yeah, it's always great to hear Dr. Wasfi speak just because she is so educated on the subject and she has such an interesting background that every time she speaks, she gives a really unique perspective and a really unique insight that I think most people don't get a chance to hear, especially not like in the mainstream media like we're talking about. So opportunities to hear her speak, hear her insight are always really valuable to me.
Definitely. And I want to add something too. Before we break. There's another clip that I think it's actually important for folks to hear, because you know, it just occurred to me if people are they're listening right now, this information is new to them, and this information was new to me at one time. It was new to Miranda at one time. You know, no one was born with this information. But it just occurred to me that maybe new to some folks that maybe the politicians that you think might be on the right side of this, you know, this issue are actually not. And if that's the case, you know, you can play a role in writing your congressperson, your senator, and saying, listen, this is wrong. This is inhumane. You know, please stop supporting them. You know, please, you know, and, you know, let your voice, you know, be heard. I want to play this because many members of the Congressional Black Caucus, who should know better, because many of these members of Congressional Black Caucus, as I recall, that they were against South African apartheid, you know, because of their, you know, African brothers and sisters, what they were going through in Azania, South Africa, you know, but with this issue, they actually are with the money. They're what I would call cowardly politicians. They're thinking much more about their political careers than they are about doing the right thing. So I want folks to listen to this and listen very, very, very closely.
Nearly one out of five members of the U.S. House of Representatives, 81 of them, this month accepted an invitation to Israel, the biggest congressional junket to the Jewish apartheid state ever. The entire tab for congressperson and spouse was paid for by AIPAC, the American Israel Political Action Committee, the most feared lobby on Capitol Hill. Among the 26 Democrats that put themselves at the disposal of the Israelis are at least five members of the Congressional Black Caucus. There may be more, but at press time, AIPAC had not released the full roster. The black members reportedly on the junket are Yvette Clark of New York, Jesse Jackson Jr. of Chicago, Gwen Moore from Milwaukee, Frederica Wilson of Miami, and Hank Johnson of suburban Atlanta. Again, this is not a U.S. government trip. It is a gift of the Israel lobby. These congresspersons will not be speaking to Hamas, the Palestinian faction that runs Gaza and won the 2006 elections for the Palestinian parliament. The Israelis have been blockading Gaza ever since and killed 1,500 Palestinians when they attacked Gaza just before President Obama took office. Americans have been imprisoned for giving what authorities call material assistance to Hamas. But it's quite all right for members of the U.S. Congress who make the laws that funnel billions of dollars to the Israeli military and state to accept gifts from Israel's lobbyists on Capitol Hill. And black lawmakers who represent the American constituency that is most sympathetic to the plight of Palestinians apparently do not feel they have compromised themselves by taking the equivalent of $8,000 from AIPAC. Rather, the real nightmare in Washington is to get on the wrong side of AIPAC and Israel as former black congresspersons Cynthia McKinney of Atlanta and Earl Hilliard of Alabama learned in 2006 when pro-Israel money contributed heavily to their defeats. Hank Johnson, who took the AIPAC trip to Israel, now holds McKinney's seat. McKinney went on to run for president on the Green Party ticket and is now one of the guiding lights in the U.S. peace movement. But you won't find any such anti-war lights illuminating Democratic presidential politics, where most believe it is a foregone conclusion that the warmongering Barack Obama will be effectively unopposed for his second nomination. All the peace talk is in the Republican presidential primary, where Congressman Ron Paul drew loud applause as well as boos when he blasted war propaganda against Iran. "Iran does not have an air force that can come here," said Paul. "They can't even make enough gasoline for themselves." He slammed the war hawks in both parties for leading the nation into yet another war. "They're building up this case just like we did in Iraq. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq," said the old libertarian from Texas. Now, until Ron Paul can put thousands of white right-wingers and Tea Partiers into the streets in opposition to U.S. wars, we shouldn't take any so-called conservative peace movement seriously. But we also can't take seriously black lawmakers that take $8,000 vacations from AIPAC, which is the same thing as taking a kickback on blood money from Israel. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
And yeah, that's one of the great things about one of the many great things about Glenn Ford and his radio commentaries. There is no gray area. It is laid out, and as they say, black and white. There is no riding the fence. You get on either one side or the other side. Miranda, I'll let you have the last word before, we're taken out by a song that I think is pretty apropos for,
Okay, yeah, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show and hosting this topic. I just think it's, one of the most blatant human rights violations that's going on in the world today. And I just want to say for everyone listening, please continue to try and stay informed and stay on top of what's going on over there. Also, if you're listening and you're in College Park, please support the UMD Students for Justice in Palestine, especially now as we're trying to push this bill forward through the legislature. It's going pretty well right now, and we think that this entire movement, whether we win or lose, has been successful just because of all the attention we've brought to it. But please, reach out to us, umdsjp@gmail.com, and like our Facebook page, Students for Justice in Palestine at the University of Maryland, and just see what you can do to help support this cause and stand up and say that you are against oppression.
Right. What's that email again?
umdsjp@gmail.com.
Right on. I got nothing to add except for Your World News, the place where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Stop riding the fence. Pick a side. The facts have been laid out. All right, you're on the side of justice and humanity, or you're on the other side of oppression, white supremacy. I could go on and on and on. So why not have a clear conscience? Why not, be a bellwether in your community, a bellwether for good in your community, and let other people follow, the courageous stance that you're taking. So let's not ride the fence, like the coup said, and in their song, Ride the Fence. So with that, here's the coup.
Yeah, that's right. Gotta get off the phone. About some verse right here. Alright, okay. I'm anti-imperial, anti-trust. Anti-corporate, they anti-my essence. Anti-sorting them, anti-depressing. But I'm not pro-poverty, I'm pro-vocative. And pro-stopping them FBI operatives who professional at black man pound and hand you a sentence that you can't pronounce. I'm also anti-narco, anti-vice. 911 marks the anti-Christ. They anti-social point M6C. Yes, I'm anti.
anti-nigga machine. Proletariat, funkadelic, parliamentarian, pro-revolt. In the 21st and sharing pro, running up in Congress saying fuck it all. But bringing people with you, that's the protocol. It's been a drug for like jailbreak. The whole world is anti-United Snake. So check it out, anticipate the antivenom. And move your antibody to this revolution rhythm. We gon' be fucking with them pro-union, but most laws they bite. Anti-motherfuckers crossing a strike. Take a look around and be for or against. But you can't do shit if you riding the fence.
Ride the fence. Now you don't really wanna ride the fence. Now do you really wanna ride the fence? Or would you really wanna ride the fence? Don't ride the fence. Ride the fence. Now you don't really wanna ride the fence.
Ride the fence. Now you don't really wanna ride the fence. Now do you really wanna ride the fence? Or would you really wanna ride?